Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll be talking with award-winning choreographer, director, and performer Kem Epifano about the return of SF Trolley Dances, presented by the Epiphany Dance Theater, coming soon to a stop along the N Line, the N Judah Line, this weekend. Also visiting is Baroque oboist Mark Schachman, member of the venerable Aulos Ensemble, one of the oldest chamber music groups performing on period instruments out of New York. This weekend, they will open the San Francisco Early Music Society's 2017-18 season in a program entitled Handel and His World. Mark will be joined by the SFEMS Executive Director, Harvey Molloy. Also, a talk with Anne Sejdera, who talks about her latest project, born out of a chance meeting at a jazz club in Prague in 2014. She brought a couple of musicians along with her. Also, Paul Andrews, president and co-founder of Slavyanka Russian Chorus, will discuss the West Coast premiere of the monumental and rarely heard choral cantata by Russian composer Sergei Taneyev. Those performances on Sunday, October 22nd, at the Mission Dolores Basilica. You want to stay tuned for that. Stay with us. Several musicians from the Czech Republic are in town for performances in Saratoga, Cupertino, and Oakland over the next couple of weeks, including a recording project they'll be involved in. They're here because of a chance encounter with Bay Area pianist-composer Anne Sejdera at a jazz club in Prague back in 2014. Anne has long been an invaluable part of the San Francisco Bay Area music scene as a leader of her own trio and performing with artists such as Alexa Weber-Morales, Terrence Brewer, and Sandy Cressman. She joins me in studio along with trumpeter Miroslav Laustal and sax player Jan Fejko. Welcome to you all.
Hello.
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 Well, that's some great music to start off with. Tell us a little bit about that opening tune, Anne, would you?
Oh, okay. Well, that is a tune called Our Lady, and it was originally written for big band for the Electric Squeezebox Orchestra, Eric Jacobson's project. And so it started out larger, you know, for a 17-piece big band. And then when I wanted to perform it with my own ensemble, I reduced it down to that. And then I ended up taking that into the studio, and Ray Oviedo produced that particular recording of it right there.
It's very nice. Got a great groove to it.
Thank you.
How did you meet these characters here, Miroslav and Jan?
Well, actually, in 2014, it was my first time to the Czech Republic, to Prague, and I was just randomly checking out music and jazz clubs, and that's when I met Jan. I'd just gone down to see, I think it was a singer who was playing, and
Jan was... No, it was with the trumpet player.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And Jan was playing bass on that gig, actually. He's a multi-instrumental.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Nobody can.
and so we just talked a bit and exchanged information, and then on the way, you know, that was the year International Jazz Day was becoming part of the consciousness of the, you know, jazz community, and so on the plane home, I started to put the project together in my mind, and here we are.
Neat. Well, let's start with you, Jan. Tell us a little bit about your musical background. You come from a family of musicians.
Yeah.
Are there others in your family that are involved in jazz as well?
Yes, of course. My uncle, he's a bass player, a very great bass player. But he showed me some music and everything, so he's very important person in my family.
Uh-huh. And were you? Did you start off with some classical training, or did you
on a sax?
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, I start on clarinet to play classic music, and then on sax I studied jazz conservatory in Prague. It's named Jaroslavije Conservatory.
Uh-huh.
We studied together with Miroslav.
Miroslav, who's now teaching at the Prague Conservatory, right?
Not now, but
not now. Oh, you have.
I was there.
He used to. Moved on to other things.
And Miroslav, you performed with the Roman Pokorny Quartet. Was that a classical group or folk?
It was guitar. He's a guitar player, jazz guitar player from Czech Republic, and it was a classical quartet with the guitar.
And so you started off studying classical music as a young kid?
I studied at the basic music school, the classical music, and after I'll be in same conservatory like Jan, and I studied both classical and jazz.
So tell me a little bit about your jazz influences. Is it primarily American jazz that you heard and were, you know, felt an affinity towards to want to learn more about?
I started to listen some American famous jazz recordings like Miles Davis and this type of, and after this I tried to listen some new from Europe and this stuff.
And was that a part of the conservatory curriculum, or was it more on the side that you would play jazz when you're at the conservatory?
Would it be
something that you studied at the conservatory, or was it just some groups that got together that then wanted to learn more about jazz?
I learned with the group from the school, and I play with some other groups around Prague and the famous musicians from Czech Republic and this.
Mm-hmm. And Jan, mm-hmm. you mentioned your father was a bass player. Is that where you first heard jazz?
No. I first listened to jazz in a car. My uncle showed me the quintet from Slovakia. It's they name Hot House, and they play. He'll play the sax player. His name is Radovan Tariška. Mm-hmm. He's my guru till now.
Uh-huh.
And I says, oh, wow, it's amazing. I was maybe 12, and it was amazing for me, that energy and that language, something. So, and then I says, okay, jazz. That's the style.
Yeah.
Okay.
And how did you come to improvisation? Of course, an important part of jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Was it something that was difficult to get a groove on to learn how to improvise?
No, because no. Okay, basically yes. But on this school, on our conservatory in Prague, so everybody can try something to do with improvisation. So you have to meet important people like Miroslav. Not teacher, basically, but that people like Miroslav, and somebody show you some records and how to get that feel and something.
Mm-hmm. Other than Prague, where else have you performed, either together or separately in Europe?
Yes, we mostly.
We are members of Czech Radio Big Band. Mm-hmm. He's a leader of saxophone section.
And when we think of big band here in the States, we think of that classical Glenn Miller type big band. But big band encompasses more than just that 1940s, 50s sound, right? And in terms of this big band?
Yes.
It's very contemporary.
Yeah.
That's another thing I saw
it's
over
from,
there.
From this type of music till modern music.
Yeah, mm-hmm. very, very
We play a whole range of the music, yeah,
right. And what about here in the States? Is this your first stop, San Francisco, or have you played in New York, or where else might you want to go?
It's a first stop.
First stop, okay. Yeah. And this particular trip, is it just on the West Coast then, or?
So only California, yeah.
Only California.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Will you make it to New York at some point?
Maybe.
Maybe some other trip, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. Can try.
So, Ann, let's talk about how this particular sets have been developing for these concerts in Cupertino, Oakland, and
Piedmont Piano Piedmont. Company in Oakland.
Mm-hmm. Right, and in Saratoga as well.
Mm-hmm. So, these two, Jan and Miroslav, we first played together actually in February, mm-hmm. and so we shared some material. We didn't compose anything together necessarily, but we picked pieces that we felt, you know, would be compatible with our taste in music, and then that concert went well, so we decided to do it in a grander form and do a recording session too. So this time in we'll have more pieces written and arranged by Miroslav, and a few more by Jan, mm-hmm. and then hopefully, if you know, all goes well, and actually those are the things we're going to record, and then the plan, if all goes well financially and logistically, then the things that I write will take over to the Czech Republic and do those over there.
Nice. Yeah. Are those a concert set?
Not the ones overseas, no.
Okay. I should also mention that these concerts here will also include local musicians Dan Feisley mm-hmm. on bass and Jason Lewis on drums.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Friday, October 20th at Cafe Pink House in Saratoga, Saturday the 21st at Open Embrace in Cupertino, and then Saturday the 28th here at the Piedmont Piano Company in Oakland. So I'd like to hear a little bit more of the music as we go out with this. I understand that one of these tracks is an arrangement of a folk tune that Miroslav has done. Can you tell us about the tune that we're going to hear?
Mm-hmm. It's a Čoto za veselé. It's a recording of Radovan Taryška, as Jan, his
yeah.
idol. And it's a folklorish from Slovakia. Yeah. And it's my arrangement of this tune.
Very nice. And where can folks go for more information about these concerts?
That would be to my website, www.annesajdera.com, and that's annesajdera.com.
Great. Miroslav Hlotsal, mm-hmm. did I get that right? Mm-hmm. All right, and Jan Fecho, thanks for coming in, and we're going to enjoy listening to this arrangement of Miroslav's now, and thank you as well. Wish you wonderful performances and a super recording session, and come back when you get those Prague dates. We'll like to talk some more.
Thank you so much.
As arranged by Miroslav Hlotsal, and we'll also hear Jan Fecho with Anne Sajdera at Saratoga's Cafe Pink House tomorrow at 7:30, Saturday in Cupertino, and next Saturday at the Piedmont Piano Company in Oakland. And Sajdera bringing these guys for some jam sessions as well as a full formal recording session at Fantasy Studios next week. Information about the concerts and her projects at annesajdera.com, annesajdera.com. We'll have that link at our website at the open air page at kalw.org. Well, Epiphany Dance Theater presents the 14th annual season of San Francisco Trolley Dances this weekend. This year's route travels along the N. Judah Muni Line from the California Institute of Integral Studies in south of Market to Kezar Triangle in Golden Gate Park. Performers this year include Chaksampa Tibetan Dance and Opera Company, Embodiment Project, Hope Moore Dance, who's been on with us before, Kelly Texas Holly, Little Seismic Dance Company, as well as Mazi Daiko and Oscar Velarde, in addition to Kim's Epiphany Dance Theater Project. A total of 12 tours are scheduled over the weekend, six each day, and each tour runs approximately 2 hours admission with your cost of a Muni ticket. Trolley Dances is the brainchild of Kim Epifano, who has a 30-year history as an award-winning choreographer, director, performer, vocalist, educator, and collaborator who strives to erase the boundaries between dance, theater, and music to create bridges of cross-cultural understanding. Since the founding of Epiphany Productions in 1997, Kim's work have been presented around the globe, and subsequent accolades include a laundry list of local honors and awards, as well as Mexico's top award in its biannual dance competition for a piece that was commissioned by the U.S.-Mexico Fund for Culture. In 2004, Epifano launched the celebrated San Francisco Trolley Dances, featuring site-specific dances by local choreographers and guests along these Muni trolley lines. It's now one of the city's largest cultural events. Kim, such a pleasure to welcome you back to Open Air.
I love coming here.
Well, how did you decide, first of all, on this year's trolley route?
Well, you know, I always go on a ride. I walk around. If my shoes could talk, I always say. And I try and find where maybe we haven't been before or what's changing in the city right now.
Wow.
So much is changing. And what do people need to see before maybe it changes also? Or something that's there that people don't know about yet. And the California Integral College of Integral Studies is an amazing building and a new gallery there. And I've been in and out of there a lot of times because I did some work there, and I thought, this is such a beautiful place. So that was the first person that I approached and the first place, and they said yes. So then once I get that yes, I go and take a ride and see how far that is, and then I'll get off and see what's there. And the Circus Center was right there where I got off.
Wow.
So to me, it's a little bit like magic. And when I talked to them, they were also interested to participate. And so from there, I see what's in walkable distance as sites and will have us as host us, which is a big deal.
Right.
Can I come and dance all over your building for a weekend?
And you literally do that.
Yeah,
sometimes walls of these buildings.
Exactly. So that's sort of how it happens every year. And I try and change it up enough so people that come annually, it's like a... they come back because I always give them a little bit something new to see. Or maybe it's someplace they've been before, but they've never seen it in that way.
So how did these the groups come together for this year's?
Well, sometimes... Well, the first group, Chaksampa, it's sort of an interesting story for me. I do this thing called the Mudbutt Mystery Theater Troupe, or Mudbutt International.
We're going to talk about that later, but let's talk about that now.
And that's really how this all started in the gallery there. For 2004 and then later, no, 2008 and then last year, 2016, I worked at a place called the Children's Tibetan Village in India, where there's many, many children that are refugees. And we went there and we did an art project, performances, dance theater, music with students from the United States. And they do homestays at the school. And then we make a show in 2 weeks with their students and our students. And it's always quite a powerful, moving experience, and the culture and the spirituality. And when I got home this time, I thought, how can I find this community here to do performance? Because I wanted to share that, some of my experience I had just had musically and artistically. And I so admire their children. We're so, work together so well. And I wanted to see if I could bring that to trolley dances. So I invited Chok Sampa, and they are the masters of what they do. They're coming from all over the country. And they said yes. And so that's sort of how that began. I knew the gallery would be, the gallery was a perfect spot for them, and also what the college stands for. So it felt like a good marriage. And through that, then the Tibetan monks from the Sera Monastery in India, it was sort of a beautiful just occurrence where we decided to work with the school to bring them also for the week to do one of their sand paintings.
Right. This is going to be of the mandala of, let me try if I try this, Avalokiteshvara, the Buddha of Compassion, which will be done in the window of the Desai Mata Gallery at CIIS.
And it's already started. So they do that for a whole week, and it's a blessing, and it's quite powerful and beautiful, and I've been there every day, and as it progressed, it's like, it almost like it's like a living painting because of the sand. So that's how that came about.
Let's remind people that the California Institute of Integral Studies is at 1453 Mission Street, and you can look at the progression of that mandala anytime.
And there's a beautiful, in the gallery, there's all these different Tibetan artists that have a show on the wall also. So you get to come into the gallery and walk around, and then the show begins.
Nice.
And from there, I went down the street, and there's a beautiful mural by an artist called Shrine. And
so let's back up again to the Chok Sampa's performance. What are they doing? A traditional style dance in that space, or what are they going to be actually dancing?
Yes, they're doing different, like, because it's only 10 minutes, because we're all going on to another site. So they're doing sections of one long opera. So they'll do a first 10 minutes, and then they'll do the second 10 minutes. So you'll just see different sections of it, depending on what tour you're on.
Oh, I see.
And they sing opera, and it sends chills down your spine. And they do movement with it also, and their costumes are exquisite. So it's not to be missed.
Nice. So again, then moving on to the next stop.
So then the embodiment project I have at the place actually called The Odd Job. It's a restaurant and bar, but on that building, it's one of the older blue buildings in town, and it's got this beautiful mural. And so they're dancing right there on the sidewalk, so we get an alleyway. And then I take you to the market on where the Twitter building actually is. They're letting us use, they redid this whole alleyway.
I've been down there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so back there, Katie Faulkner, Little Seismic Dance Company, she's made a beautiful piece. And she calls it a modern-day folk dance. And then because of the setting, she sort of put some twist on it. It's quite powerful, and the sound score is excellent. And then we get on the Anjuna, but there was a little twist this year. There was a, Muni has gotten us our own hybrid bus for Saturday and Sunday this year.
Nice.
So there was a little, they had to do some construction, and so they decided to come forward and help us still get to where we need to go. So we're taking a bus this year. On Friday, we're still on the Anjuna with the student program that we do. And then we go out to the Circus Center. And Holly, Texas, tells you the story about the Circus Center as if it's a living creature on stilts. She's like the ringmaster. Hope Moore will be up on these star steps on the bleachers where many people have sat to watch people fly through the air and learn how to do circus. And she's interpreting that with her in her own way with five women. And there's a live horn player. And then you go outside and you see this amazing juggler, Oscar Velarde, and he is just stupendous. You just want to cheer when he's doing it. And then you come out to where I am with Mazi Daiko, and we're at the Kezar Triangle. And that's sort of a part of the park that just got redone. So it's sort of fun to see that because not many people know that or been there or hung out there. They usually go deeper into the park. And it's a joy to work with Mazi Daiko. The music's fabulous. It's taiko and violin and marimba and djembe.
Well, We'll hear some of that music shortly after we conclude our talk. I'm talking with Kim Epifano, Artistic Director of Epiphany Dance Theater and the brainchild behind San Francisco Trolley Dances. What strikes me about this, Kim, is that as well as for the folks that actively follow the schedule, this is such a great way to bring dance to the unsuspecting public.
Yes, because they just, you don't have to get on a tour. You might just walk into it and not even know it's happening.
Right.
So it's sort of the nature of it. It's almost like jello, and it can blossom around a corner and there's more people, and then some people will go away or they'll follow us through. Or you can get a bike map. You can see us ride your bike. You can see one section or another section. Coming on the tour is fun because it's like a treasure hunt and we bring you through. Mm. But it is also Epiphany Dance Theater's 20th anniversary. So there's something about the community also and making it for everybody that's important to me. And also the groups that are in the production, that it's really varied in styles of dance, ages, backgrounds.
And have you started research on another line for next year?
Yes.
You have already.
Every time I do it, I'm like, am I going to do this again? And by the end, I'm just thrilled. But it is, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of territory to cover because we're connecting neighborhood to neighborhood. And so it's very energetic.
Lots of logistics, too.
It's lots of logistics and lots of places. Like I said, if my sneakers could talk, so many places and wonderful people. I mean, people are so fantastic. And I feel like right now it's been a dark time. And I feel like this will help ground us a little bit. And it's joyful and it's important. And there's a lot of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
With the monks doing the sand painting.
You mentioned earlier your involvement as creator of the Mud Butt Mystery Theater Troupe. Mm. You've been so passionate about bringing children into experiencing dance, especially cross-culturally. You mentioned one place. You've also been to Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about some of the other children you've encountered and the way they've experienced the joy of discovery just with seeing another culture and dancing with them.
Well, I feel like children are ambassadors of the world, and they are amazing creatures. They always think of things I never would think of. And when you bring them to a new place, and maybe even out of their comfort zone, and the bond is the art making, you don't even need to speak the same language. So they share each other's art, and then you create together, and then they perform together, and it's completely bonding. I mean, they're just crying when they have to leave each other. And I'm always very moved by the experiences. It's changed who I am and the kind of work I do in the world. So that's what stitches together is the art. That's the language. And then they come back, and I feel like their view of the world has changed and what they think of people. And I think that's also really important right now. Like I said, people are lovely everywhere you go. And we've been to Turkey a couple of times, Istanbul, and outside of that area, Vietnam, Mexico, Guatemala, Nicaragua. And then also in my own work, I worked in Mexicali, Mexico, for living right on the border with adult groups. So that impact to me is really important as an artist. The hands-on of making art with many different types of people from all over the world.
Where's the next stop for Mud Butt, then?
It looks like we might be going to the Galapagos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Luckily, I'm one of those people that's been there before. That's a life-changing experience. Mm. How was the world made?
Wow, yeah. Well, we should also mention that locally, you are in your fourth year of residency at the Bessie Carmichael Elementary School here in San Francisco.
Yeah.
In one of the city's poorest neighborhoods. How are kids responding to dance in that environment?
Well, I think it's actually going on my fifth year, believe it or not. I love going to the Bessie Carmichael schools. I do storytelling, dance, theater, and visual arts, so I'll go in there and I'll take like a Filipino folktale and I make it echo storytelling, and they also then do visual arts. They make things for the show. I love it in there. I have a great rapport with the kids. They love when Miss Kim walks in. It's educational, it's fun, it's artful, it's tactile. It's a good way to get your language skills built up because of the theater form. And I feel like the teachers really appreciate me coming in there. And I really want to mention that Yerba Buena Center for the Arts is the reason I get a residency there. They've been supporting that program recently.
Nice, nice. Well, we look forward to seeing you on the walls on these various stops along the N. Judah line this weekend. We're going to hear a little bit of the music of Mazi Daiko as we say goodbye. Kim Afavana, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Once again, the San Francisco Trolley Dances will feature Chak Sampa, Tibetan Dance and Opera Company, Embodiment Project, Hope Moore Dance, Kelly Texas Holly, Little Seismic Dance Company, Mazi Daiko, who we're hearing here, Juggler Oscar Velarde, and Epiphany Dance Theater. That's Kim's group. It's this weekend. Tours on Saturday are at 11, 11:45, 12:30, 1:15, 2, and 2:45. Likewise, Sunday. Admission is your price of a Muni ticket. The starting point, the California Institute of Integral Studies, 1453 Mission Street, ends up at Kezar Pavilion. Do join Kim Epifano and company for that. More information at epiphanydance.org. Taiko drums, we go back some ways to the land of Baroque music, and that's music from the venerable Aulos Ensemble, celebrating its 44th anniversary this year and opening San Francisco Early Music Society's new season on October 20th, tomorrow evening, with a program devoted to Handel and his world, including contributions by Purcell and Telemann. Aulos oboist Mark Schachman joins me in studio to talk about the concerts. Mark was born in Berkeley and studied music at Stanford and the Juilliard School. He's performed as soloist and principal oboe with original instrument orchestras throughout the country, including our own San Francisco's Philharmonia Baroque, the Handel and Haydn Society and Boston Baroque, as well as mostly Mozart and the American Classical Orchestra in New York, among other ensembles, and is heard on a broad range of recordings. He recently moved back to the Bay Area, where he has formed the Cantata Collective, an ensemble devoted to performing all of the Bach cantatas. Welcome to you, Mark, to our studios.
Thank you.
He's joined by the San Francisco Early Music Society Executive Director, Harvey Malloy, who will share more details about the full season. Welcome back to you, Harvey.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Well, Mark, how long have you been playing with Aulos?
I think we started in 1973.
Oh, my gosh. You're one of the founding members.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
You know, this group, Harvey and I, were chatting outside. This is not a group that's going to outlive us. We're going to continue to play as long as we play, and that's it. We're going to probably see our 50th birthday.
Wow.
And the personnel's been remarkably consistent.
Uh-huh.
The piece you were just playing is a Handel trio that's on the concert we're doing starting tomorrow night. And that was my wife, Linda Kwan, playing violin and
uh-huh.
with me playing oboe. And we were the original members of the group. Myron Lutsky, our cellist, came to us in our second year. So he's been there for all that time. I mean, Chris Kruger, our flutist, is the relative newcomer. He's only played with us for about 25 years.
Okay. You're getting to be an ancient ensemble yourself.
Well,
you got to be careful there.
In a certain sense, yeah. Well, when we started, there were no other ensembles of this type. We were sort of the original instrument pioneers. There were certainly no orchestras that were going on, and we had no dreams that we would end up making our livings in this field. The whole reason, actually, that Linda and I moved back out here was because I played so regularly with Philharmonia, and mm-hmm. I basically had spent half my time here in California, and I figured why not spend the rest of it here.
Right.
So it was more attractive in New York. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, Aulos has been at the forefront of this whole early music, original music movement. When did you first try your hand and lips on an early oboe as opposed to a classical contemporary oboe?
Well, 1973, we started, and the harpsichordist at the time said, we started on modern instruments. If we don't switch to Baroque instruments within the next year, I'm going to quit. And we had just started this group, and I didn't realize that if someone quit, it didn't meant that the group would go down the tubes. So we immediately took him up on his challenge, and we loved him. And he quit anyway in the next year. But as I said, there were really no predecessors to what we were doing here in the States. People had been doing this in Europe for some time. And a wonderful man who was a tremendous influence on all of us, both in Aulos and really for the entire scene here in America, Albert Fuller started a festival called Aston Magna at that time. And he brought in a bunch of wonderful people, Europeans, who'd been doing this for some time. And then we were the sort of kids and picked up on it. And so within a year after Aulos started, we had tried Baroque instruments. And then this entire movement sort of grew up around us.
That's interesting because back in 73, there wasn't an early music program at Stanford or Juilliard, for that matter, right?
Juilliard is is a baby. I mean, it's fantastically successful. It's been going on for, what, maybe 5 years?
Wow.
Something like that? I mean, I was at Juilliard and Albert Fuller was at Juilliard. There was nothing. No, for the longest time. All the conservatories really sort of frowned on this for many, many years, and it wasn't until all these orchestras began getting Grammys and selling many more recordings of this literature than their modern counterparts that the conservatories began taking this thing really seriously.
Hmm. Well, for those of us that aren't familiar with the difference between a modern oboe and a Baroque oboe, what are some of the fundamental differences
in
the instruments?
All the instruments, the differences between the Baroque and their modern counterparts are similar. I mean, physically, the Baroque oboe has no keys. So, from a distance, it'll look like a recorder with a reed. But
a double reed.
A double reed, yeah. But, and the flute, of course, is wood as opposed to metal. But the violins look identical. But the great violins were made during the Baroque period. And to this day, no one has made a better violin than those people who were making them then. And
those fiberglass ones don't count.
No. And the violins got changed. People kept trying to make them. All the instruments got louder. Was basically the simplest way of simplistic, but it's also accurate. All the instruments got louder. They had to get louder because music started to be played in different places. So when
larger halls, basically.
Yeah, larger halls, exactly. And so the woodwind instruments gradually, the bores of the instruments changed and keys were added. Keys were not added for facility. Keys were added to avoid the cross-fingerings that the early instruments had, which was what we love about them, that each key sounds different and each note sounds different.
Indeed.
And so once you started adding keys, then you started very quickly adding a lot of keys, which both made the instrument much stronger because it eliminated these cross-fingerings. And at the same time, it also eliminated this really beautiful fragrance of the difference between C minor and D minor.
Right. Well, I think that's something that contemporary audiences and ears have lost sight of, that composers had a very specific mood or a sound in mind depending on which key they decided to compose
it. In fact, there are some of the treatises even talked about the various affects of different keys. Yeah, but that's something that any audience who comes to our concerts or comes to any of the Sfems concerts will immediately hear and respond to. I mean, that's why it's good. And as I mentioned, though, that with the string instruments, what they did was they just found ways of strengthening them. And so when we talk about a Baroque violin, we're talking about removing those stronger physical things that enabled the violins to work under greater tension. And so now they're back to where they were and at a very relaxed and beautiful quality.
Right, and primarily what we're talking about, again, for our radio audience that may not be familiar, is that instead of hard steel strings. We're moving back to a gut string.
That's correct.
For the
yes. And less and less tension.
Less tension.
Yeah.
That's always been a challenge. I've always wanted to become involved in early music ensemble. I'm a flutist myself, but I'm a contemporary flutist, and I've got a 14-karat gold Powell flute that I'm just happy with the purity of the sound, and I've always had the challenge of just embracing the airiness that comes from a wooden flute,
yeah.
and just understanding that that's part of the quality of the sound.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the program that was put together for this opening concert of the San Francisco Early Music Society season.
Handel and His World is the title we came about. It was we actually had a lot of back and forth, with colleagues at SFIMS about what to play. We had originally proposed a program. We love playing Handel. There's a lot of fantastic music, and although he gets played a lot, it's certainly the talent and the variety of his compositions justifies that. We had done an interesting program called A Tale of Two Cities, where we did the first half of London, which was mainly Handel and Purcell, a wonderful Purcell suite that we're starting the concert with. And then the second half would be French from both Couperin and Rameau. And because SFEMS's programming is... they do a lot of concerts, and they bring in a lot of wonderful ensembles. They said, well, you know, we have a group coming later in the season that's doing an all-French program. So they didn't want us to do an all-French second half. So we went around the bush a little bit to try to figure something out. And I realized that we had had a similar situation with a presenter in Michigan a few years ago, and we'd come up with this sort of hybrid program called Handel and His World. Turns out that we'd like to have a theme for all our programs. We could have just played any composers and a lot of good music. But it turns out that Handel and Telemann had an incredible relationship. They, of course, they came as children. They came from the same part of Germany. And they both had a career that led them into, wonderful, Telemann traveled almost as much as Handel did. It turns out that they corresponded later in life and that they had a great love of plants. And so Handel, it turns out, sent Telemann a lot of horticulture from England, where, of course, he ended up and, had his great career. So we thought, gee, if we could put Telemann into this mix because of this interesting correspondence they had. And then we kept, of course, the Purcell. So we're basically mixing up Handel and Telemann with a Purcell Fairy Queen suite as the overture to the concert. And it's it gives us a lot of variety and a lot of color, which is what we strive for in our programs.
Nice. That's Mark Schachman, Baroque oboist with the Aulos Ensemble, opening the San Francisco Early Music Society's concert, which will be, I've got it here, I had it here, tomorrow evening in Palo Alto at the First Presbyterian Church, Saturday in Berkeley at the St. John's Presbyterian, and Sunday here in San Francisco at St. Mark's Lutheran Church. Also joined by Harvey Malloy, the executive director of San Francisco Early Music Society. Harvey, a great way to start off the season.
Yes, and we're thrilled to have this really seminal ensemble performing for us on what is now our 41st season.
41st, wow.
And as Aulos is one of the founders of this, founding early music ensembles, our series is a founding early music series, in one of the earliest in the nation. And we've had many people take part on this series who have become now household names. I mean, I'm thinking of people like Anonymous Four, Ben Bagby, Franz Bruggen, Emma Kirkby, the Kaiken brothers, Jordi Savall. And so we're very proud of the series. But thinking about what Mark was saying, about the colors and the instrumentation, what strikes me is even more important, going back to I started also, like Mark did, in this field more than 40 years ago, is that we call it historically informed music making. However, it's not the realm of musicologists per se anymore, in that people like Mark now own this music. It's their own. They invent it on the stage. It's not like they could listen to recordings.
True enough, yeah.
And reimagine it. And many of the programs, our season covers five centuries of music. Following the Alos Ensemble, we'll have Charamella, which is a wonderful group from Southern California, led by Adam and Rotem Gilbert, with all kinds of wonderful instruments that they'll be playing. This is actually it's a 16th century program with shawms, recorders, bagpipes, hurdy-gurdies, all kinds of wonderful instruments. And, you know, they're more or less making it up as they go along. They have source documents, but these musicians, they're like great jazz musicians. I come to these concerts and I see the freedom that these people have and the creativity and the inventiveness, and it's just a pleasure to come to these. There's nothing rigid
in the early music world. That's why it has so much appeal, I think, to the 21st century audience, because they sense that.
Mark, after this long on Baroque Oboe, is the Baroque Oboe your exclusive realm now?
I sold my modern oboe a year ago. And so, and I was still, you know, playing it quite a bit. Everybody else in the group, well, I wouldn't say our harpsichordist does a lot of contemporary music, but our violinist, flutist, and cellist play their modern instruments as often or almost as often as their old instruments. But one of the reasons that I was able and that I felt I needed to get rid of my modern oboe is that because this field is so explosive and so busy, I play an oboe, a different oboe for Mozart and Beethoven, a different oboe for Brahms. Believe it or not, we have Philharmonia has recorded Brahms and played it, and Schumann. And so I really do have to play three different oboes, three different pitches. And so the Baroque oboe is not exclusive, but I have gotten rid of my modern oboe.
Hmm. And has your move back to the Bay Area made it a little bit more difficult to keep up the relationship with Alos? Or?
Not at all. We find that the boundaries of the geographical boundaries these days mean very little. I mean, I thought you were going to ask, was it harder to keep up all the work that I was doing in New York? And the answer to that is a little bit, yeah, I think I'm going to phase that out. It's so wonderful being here. But with Alos, which was basically a touring ensemble, we would end up wherever we were going to end up. And so now it's just a wonderful, I wouldn't call it a vacation, but a working vacation. Wherever we're performing, we congregate and enjoy a bunch of wonderful meals with each other, do a little rehearsing, and then play some wonderful concerts. So it's terrific.
Well, tell us briefly about the Cantata Collective and the wealth of music that we have from Vox Cantatas.
Yeah.
That'll keep you busy for a while.
That certainly will. That was one of the reasons that my colleagues in the New Esterhazy Quartet and I started this group. And it was, again, in a way, in a sense, to play music with our colleagues and do something that would be very, very local at the same time. In other words, it's a totally different model than Alos, which is a touring ensemble, and we played all over the world. And we used to present ourselves in New York City, but haven't done that for a long, long time. Cantata Collective is going to do nothing but play Bach cantatas for an audience that we hope to build. We did one performance, our debut maiden voyage on September 10th, and we're astounded by how many people showed up at the church. One of the tenets of our mission, our core mission, is in a sense that we want to give these concerts to the public. We're charging no admission. And Harvey and I have spent about the last hour discussing the pros and cons of such an approach, but it remains to be seen. But obviously, as you said, the literature and the amount of time that we can spend playing this music goes on forever. And if we do all 200 and some odd cantatas, we'll go back and do them again.
Nice. Yeah. Mark Schachman performing along with Christopher Kruger on flute, Utraverso and recorder, Linda Kwan, Baroque violin, Myron Lutzke, Baroque cello, and Arthur Haas. They are the Alos Ensemble opening the San Francisco Early Music Society 2017-18 program. Tomorrow in Palo Alto, Saturday in Berkeley, Sunday here in San Francisco. Information at sfems.org. Harvey Molloy, thanks for coming in. We'll have
you back
again to talk about some Bach, perhaps, or the next ensemble on the route.
Fabulous. We'll look forward to it.
Thanks, gentlemen. More Handel to go out. Handel for Your Pleasure as part of Handel and His World, the program of the San Francisco Early Music Society and the Aulos Ensemble. Information at sfems.org. Well, more great music is in store for you, especially if you enjoy Russian choral music. My next guest is Paul Andrews, who was a guest on Sunday evening with Sarah Cahill in Revolutions Per Minute. Paul was the original director of the Slavyanka Men's Chorus. His interest in Russian music began when he was singing with the Yale University Russian Chorus as a student. He moved to California in the 70s, was co-founder and first conductor of Slavyanka, a male choir modeled on the Yale Chorus, and devoted to the choral music of Russia and Eastern Europe. The chorus is now directed by Irina Shaknova and is now a choir of men and women, which has toured four times to Russia and Eastern Europe and has put out dozens of recordings. The second San Francisco Festival of Russian Choral Music concludes this Sunday, and Paul's here to talk about that. Welcome back to our airwaves. Not too long ago, you were on it as well, Sunday evening.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us about your interest in, I guess it started at Yale, didn't it?
Yes, it did. I was a member of the Yale Russian Chorus, an organization founded in the middle of the Cold War, actually, doing music and a lot of cross-cultural track B diplomacy as well. It was founded with a dual mission of both being a musical organization and a way of connecting people from two cultures at a time when things were not so good between governments. A time I might note that we're maybe returning to.
I was going to say, history does repeat itself, for better or for worse. I hope the musical collaboration is for the better.
We think of ourselves as doing the plankton level of peacemaking. So.
And so tell me about how this second festival came about.
Well, I think what's fascinating about this festival is that it's devoted primarily to music of what's called in Russia the Silver Age. The Golden Age was the early age of Pushkin and the first sort of outpouring of literature and poetry in the early 19th century. The Silver Age really followed it, and we just love this opportunity to share this extraordinary music of this period. It was a period in Russian music which was incredibly prolific, period of incredibly prolific composition. We have a particular focus on the work of a man named Sergei Taneyev, who Russians call, believe it or not, the Russian Bach. He was an extraordinary student of counterpoint. He was Tchaikovsky's pupil, favored pupil, and he was also Rachmaninoff's teacher, as well as the teacher of people like Chesnikov and Kostalsky and a whole lot of other Russian composers of the era who were just really key figures in the development of Russian choral music.
Also quite a pianist in his own right. I believe he premiered Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto in, I forget which city was it.
Yes, yes, he did. And he was very close to Tchaikovsky and actually later became the head of the Moscow Conservatory and was crucial in forming the educational system that still survives in Russia. for musical education.
So tell us a little bit more about this massive piece that you'll be doing.
Massive piece is a piece, it's a choral cantata called Johann Damascene, which roughly St. John of Damascus in translated. The text for this was written by an 8th century Saint John of Damascus for the funeral service of a brother monk. And 1,000 years later, the Russian poet Alexei Tolstoy wrote a poem incorporating these words from that service. And it was from that poem that Taneyev took the text. It's very, very powerful spiritual force. The first movement is actually the experience of somebody actually in the moment when they are actually at the very end of life. My body is fading. My body is going cold. I can no longer hear my brothers crying for me. It's just very deeply personal and forceful kind of thing. The second movement, which we'll hear in a moment, says, even though I sleep the sleep eternal, my love will never die. And then the third movement is rather like the Dies Irae from Western Requiem. You know, when the trumpet sounds the end of the world, receive your departed servant into your heavenly abode.
We're going to push right into that third movement due to time restrictions.
Sure, of course.
But I should also mention that this Russia's Bach concert will be at 4:00 at Mission Dolores Basilica here in San Francisco.
On Sunday,
Featuring the Slavyanka Chorus with Irina Shekneva.
Shachneva,
thank you, conducting. Also celebrated countertenor Andrei Nemzer is a part of this concert.
Extraordinary, yeah. Winner of the Metropolitan Opera competition in 2011 out of 1,500 singers. You will never hear a voice like this again.
As well as the Russian Festival Chorus and Orchestra conducted by Irina. Eric Kujawski is also guest conductor on this program. Mm-hmm. The West Coast premiere of Taneyev's Johann Damascene and Sunrise. This is an excerpt from the third movement of Taneyev's The Fugue. And I thank you for coming in, and we'll look forward to that concert on Sunday. It's a culmination of a whole series of productions that you've been involved in.
Yes. There's also a Friday night concert at Star of the Sea of Sacred Music as well.
Information, they can go to
www.slavyanka chorus.org.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Just a taste of the massive Sergei Taneyev's John of Damascus. Be heard at 4:00 this Sunday at Mission Dolores Basilica, the Slavyanka Festival Chorus and Orchestra. Slavyanka, by the way, the original name that the Russians gave to the what we now know as the Russian River. I guess Slavyanka was too difficult to talk about, to pronounce by early American settlers around Fort Ross. So next time you're at the Russian River, call it the Slavyanka, see what people say. Information at slavyankachorus.org, S-L-A-V-Y-A-N-K-A chorus.org. That's Open Air for this Thursday, October 19th. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing the show and herding cats into and out of the studios and providing calendar information. If you'd like to get on the Open Air calendar, send me an email, david@kalw.org. It's at klw.org where all our shows are archived. I also want to thank Peter Robinson for guest hosting last week. And thank you for your efforts, Peter. Join me next time for more cultural happenings here in the Bay Area.